Could I, given the fact that we're running a bit behind schedule, could I ask the board members and the staff that are presenting to be at the table so we could get started? While we're getting organized, could I also say that we have a very tight window. We have actually a 30-minute budget for this item, which includes a staff presentation. I would remind everybody that there are four members of the committee, myself, Mr. Acosta, Ms. Porter, Ms. Hines, and that for the first round of committee comment or questions, that I would like to allocate that time to members of the committee first, and after that, other board members who are here in attendance. With that, I would ask for an approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made and seconded for approval of the agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Next is approval of the minutes.
So moved.
Motion made and seconded for the approval of the minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
We have an action item. The only item on the committee's agenda is the approval of rail service standards. I would say that this issue came before this committee in the summertime. There was some pushback about further involvement by the RAC, the AAC, and the public writers about what these standards actually meant, what the intent was, and a general request for some clarification. They were withdrawn from the board's consideration, and the staff has gone through that process of consultation. They presented a new resolution for the board to adopt. I would remind the committee that these standards were initiated so that there would be a parallel accountability process on rail service to what we already have in bus service. We have a process that leads to an annual decision-making framework for adjustments in bus service and a review of specific accountability by line on the bus system itself. The accountability here is about a complex set of standards. We have agreed as a board and as a committee that this is phase one of the standards review process, that there will be a second phase or perhaps even a third phase of review about rail service standards, and that there needs to be some, I think, clarity about what we're going to approach in phase two, like off-peak standards, et cetera. And with that, I would open it for the staff's discussion of the issue.
Thank you. Andrew? Is this on? No, it's on. Red? No. Sorry.
There we go. Andrea Burnside, Chief Performance Officer. You took away some of my speaking points already, so I'll try to be pretty brief on this. I think you all know that you're here because you are interested in adopting and reviewing key performance standards to provide policy guidance regarding the quantity and quantity of transit service And this is a new policy role for the board that you have set for yourself under the new board bylaws. As Mr. Downs mentioned, standards aren't a new concept. We have had them actually as policies, board policies for bus, starting way back in 1998. And we do have them on the rail side, but they are standards that were set by staff and are used by staff. So they're informal standards used to plan and manage service. Your action today and later this month would formalize those standards. One of the things we talked about with the advisory groups was kind of what are standards and why should we set them. So there's different ways you can define standards, but for the purposes of what you're doing today, I think what we're talking about is standards being a set of criteria for ensuring quality. So how does management and the board ensure quality? This is accomplished by, first of all, setting the standards, then measuring ourselves against those established standards, and reporting regularly about how we're doing. What standards are not is a decision about service reduction. So I think that was a little miscommunication last time, and folks kind of thought we were reducing service. So that was a point that I reiterated with the advisory committees. More importantly, they let customers know what to expect on a typical day during rush periods, gives the GM guidance on how to deploy service today and how to think about planning for the future. Just basically helps us make decisions, informs capital investment and operating resource needs. And as I mentioned, accountability, because we would report on how we're doing on a regular basis. We did talk to those folks on the Accessibility Advisory Committee, the Writers Advisory Committee, about this being a phase one of potentially a multiple phased effort. So I think that's kind of where we are. As mentioned in July, we recommended some action from the board on three basic standards that are already in use by staff, which are hours of service, train frequency, which is also known as headways in technical jargon, and passengers per car. You did express concern about some of the parameters being proposed, so we made some adjustments, and then we did engage those three groups, as well as the general public using a Planet Metro blog. So if we can go to the slide that talks about hours of service today, you can see on the slide there that I won't read out what the hours are, but those are our hours of service today, and not reflected on the slide are what we would consider our rush service hours, which on weekdays are 6:30 to 9 a.m. and then 3:30 to 6 p.m. In real life, obviously, the entire rail system doesn't just shut off at 3 a.m. on weekend nights. There's a gradual tapering off as the last trains out of downtown head out of the yards to the ends of the lines. This was a question that actually someone asked at one of the presentations we made. How do we know when the last train is? So at the kiosk in every station, there's a sign posted showing customers what the last train is. They can also go onto WMATA.com and go to the station, and it lists the last train kind of from the nearest end of the line station. So that information is available to the public. Why do we have these hours of service? They're basically historical practice. They're established by the amount of resources we have. And then obviously, as you're all aware, we need certain time to maintain the system when it closes down. So these hours give us time to maintain the system. Okay, how often? So that's the headways or frequencies of trains. Think about it as maximum customer wait time. So for customers, what it means is the more frequent the service, the lower the average wait times. I think that makes logical sense. In weekdays, in the system core interline segments, where most customers are traveling, which is shown by the thick, hopefully you get the map of the thick green line, the trains run from a range of 2.5 to 3 minutes apart. So that is defined on the red line as Silver Spring to Grosvenor, on the orange-blue line from Rosalyn to Stadium Armory, on the yellow-green line from L'Enfant Plaza to Mount Vernon Square, and on the yellow-blue line from King Street to Pentagon. Customers further out on the lines, as reflected by the dashed thick orange line and kind of near the ends of line stations, experience between a 4 to 6 minute wait time during the rush periods. And then one station, Arlington Cemetery, currently has a wait time during the rush periods of up to 12 minutes, and that's the thin dotted line up there. And I'll talk a little bit about the constraints that are listed on the slide here about system design and equipment in just a minute. Okay, next slide. How crowded? in the rush period and the rush period direction, passengers per car. So for customers, what this means is, can you get on a train and get a seat during the rush hour at the busiest stations? And if you can't, how comfortable are you going to be on that train? How crowded is it? So the standard for planning today is 100 passengers per car. And from a customer point of view, what they would see in 100 passengers per car is that all the seats are taken, plus about half that many additional customers are standing. We looked at engineering load configurations and kind of things like standard space per customer, and we feel that a range of average minimum of 80 up to 100 standard 120 average standard passengers per car makes sense. And I'll say a couple of things about 120. This is not something that happens on a regular basis. 120 is crush load. It's 4th of July. It could be inauguration. It could be you're the person that gets on the next train after an offloaded train, but it's not something that is regular. We strive for the 100 passengers per car as optimal during the rush periods. And the prior standard about frequency and this standard about crowded, they work together. They're counterbalancing standards. So as passengers per car crowding goes up, the capacity, we increase our frequency to try to offset that. And then conversely, as passengers per car goes down, we might adjust the headways to match that. So they're not kind of standalone things. They work together. The next slide was kind of benchmarking against others. You've seen this before, so I won't say too much about it, except to say that all transits use similar standards and measures, headways, span of service, which is when you're open, passengers per car, how well is the service being delivered, on-time performance, fare recovery. The difference really among agencies is whether there are formally adopted policies or whether they're used informally, and you can see from the way the boxes are checked how that works. Okay, next slide. Considerations for setting standards. Talked about some of the whys on the prior slides, but if you think about pressures, we have this sort of up pressure during the rush period when ridership has us maxed out. We run every available train car as hard and fast and as safely as possible. Then we have this down pressure in the non-rush period when we are constrained by our budget. We can't afford under our current budget to run more service. We already mentioned the hours needed to maintain the system as another factor. So physical constraints limit faster service. Our system design prevents trains from running less than 2 minutes and 15 seconds apart, to be specific. The fastest headway we schedule is 2.5 minutes. And then we have these things called tripper trains. That's kind of transit jargon for trains that are inserted into the schedule to make it appear to customers like things are coming more frequently. We also have tunnel constraints. I don't think I need to say anything about that. What's that? To make it actually, we're not just doing things to look good, in other words. We have tunnel constraints. We can only fit so many trains through a tunnel at a time. And then there's electrical considerations, have enough traction power for 8-car trains going in both directions. Fleet size is dependent on very long capital investment decisions and won't change until all of the 7,000 series cars are here. This will take some time. And as you all know, the time from a decision about, hey, we need more rail cars to actually bring them here is measured in years. As contrasted to the bus side of the house, where we, you know, in order to maintain our fleet age, we're introducing new buses all the time, every year. And then finally, budgets, that goes without saying, limits better service, increased service. Operating budget precludes us from hiring more rail staff, and budgets can limit our ability to solve core capacity problems, buy bigger fleets, and so on. So next slide. At the request of this committee, we did the outreach effort in September. And I would say that we got some initial input, and the Riders Advisory Council and the Accessibility Advisory Committee said they were going to get back together and come back with some more recommendations. So we haven't received those as of yet. So what I'm going to talk about today is really what we got at the meeting and through the blog. So Most people were appreciative of the effort to establish rail service standards. That was a pretty common theme. There weren't many comments about the hours of service, with the exception of folks who asked to get more specific information about when does this station close. And with respect to passengers per car standards, the comments tended to focus on individuals' experiences in stations. By far, the greatest number of comments came about train frequency, and those included suggestions for establishing frequency standards for non-rush and special event service, along with specific direction on what wait times should be for customers. Members of the RAC encouraged transparency in posting of the performance, and they also suggested additional standards be developed for things like escalator availability, platform crowding, and other rail operations factors. So as I mentioned, the two groups are going to be working together to discuss additional criteria that they'd like to see incorporated into this set of standards. So that brings us to the last slide, slide 10, which is the action that we're asking the committee and the board to take for service hours. So the hours are shown up there, and it's really just formalizing the hours that we currently are open for service. The second one, rush service frequency, also known as headways. So you know, it varies by location in our system, as we talked about on the map. We are asking for a standard of up to 3 minutes in the core interline segments. I listed what those exactly are, and the resolution has been clarified to so that you don't need a map. Thank you. And then up to 6 minutes near the ends of the lines, up to 12 minutes at Arlington Cemetery. The third standard, rush service passengers per car. Again, we're shooting for the average of 100 is optimal, but within a range of 80 to 120 on average. And then the final point, back to how I defined a standard earlier on, it's establishing a set of criteria to ensure quality. So we will monitor adherence to these standards and report trends on a quarterly basis through vital signs, along with any actions that management needs to take, plans to take to adjust, to make some mitigations if necessary. So as Mr. Down said, this is the beginning. To go from no policy to a policy is a big step. It's not certainly, I think, where everyone expects us to be eventually, but it's a beginning with some key basic standards, and that's my presentation.
Thank you. As I said at the beginning, I'm going to ask that the members of the committee be the first to have an opportunity to ask questions or comments. So, Ms. Porter.
Thank you. First of all, I think this is clearer than where we were before, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate the effort. The question comment that I had was on the resolution. I'm looking at the most recent version that we got, which is revised from the one that was sent to us in advance. And the last resolved clause on the first page talks about headways being up to the following average maximum. And I'm not sure what an average maximum is.
So what we're trying to say there is that there may be some instances when we don't achieve this maximum that's listed on the 3 minutes on the interline segments, 12 minutes. So it's taking an average of the instances over a month.
So does that mean that it's a standard? Okay, it's getting a little, I'm not understanding again. So it's a standard for what the maximum should be.
Yes.
So what we want to say is this headways will adhere to the following standards for averages over the course of a month. That's what you mean.
Yes.
Okay. Can we say something like that? Because I think that would be clear. So maybe just some. We don't need to wordsmith it, but I think we need to really be clear what it is that we're saying. I think that was part of the problem last time.
Actually, can I? I'm going to disagree. I want to appreciate very much the rewrites that you did. They are far clearer. In the initial ones that were presented to us, this idea of average was not present in either of the resolve clauses that we're going to be discussing. This is a different idea. You had a range in there, but the headway one, a range from 2.5 to 3 minutes. And I presume then that when you reported to us, you were going to tell us, you know, 87% of the headways on this line fell between 2.5 and 3 minutes, and the other 13% were either more frequent or less frequent. And I am struggling to understand why saying maximum changes that. It simply says you're going to now have a single point and you're going to report how many were below the maximum and how many were above the maximum and how many hit the maximum. And so the idea of average, I actually don't get it in either this one or in the one that says an average minimum of 80 and an average maximum of 120. You've established an acceptable range and a target within the range, and we're going to have a report back on that. So I just don't get the introduction of average for these. So
I would agree with you. My concern, and it's not so much with the headways, it's with the passenger occupancy, is that this is setting up performance standards for us. And really, how do you measure that? And it's really averages, whether it's in the month or something like that. So if we ride up for some days above it, I don't want us to be in a position where we're violating the policy of the authority. That's what you're setting here is policy. So if the average for the month is not the frequencies, but the passenger loading is 100 or 110, you know, we're within policy. Right. If we start going above to 135, you know, we're certainly out of it. That's measured averages for the month. If we have 5 days during a month that we hit 135, we've exceeded the policy limitations, and I'm now into trying to deal with the fact that I violated policy. That's my concern. That's why I prefer to use average.
I could also say something about that, the idea of averages. So if you think about we're setting standards for rush period. Rush period is not like all of a sudden like you flip the switch and rush period is on and we're like all ready to go, all systems go. I think this is actually on, Tom, thank you. It's actually a ramping up and a ramping down. So there are kind of some periods which you're ramping up to rush service and then you're ramping down. So the concept of average tries to reflect that.
Can I follow up on that? I appreciate what Mr. Charles said. But the way the resolution is written, the passenger load is defined in a completely different resolve clause. So that the issue that, and I completely agree with your comments, that we can deal with the passenger load in a different way than we deal with the headways. And the concern that I have is the headways. And in terms of headways, I don't know why we couldn't do it that way. Why we couldn't say, you know, the number of trains which exceeded X headway were, or the proportion of trips which exceeded X headway were. I think we're saying the same thing. I'm fine with using averages for passenger load, but the question comes to headways.
You're going to have the shoulders no matter where you draw the line, the shoulders are going to exist. And you'll have some six-car trains where, for whatever reason, everybody came late. And, you know, I'm on the other one now. But.
So we could just, if we could take out average, everybody would be fine with that. On the bottom resolve clause on the first page, which only refers to headways.
Okay. Is that big?
That takes care of me on that one.
Okay. And
okay. Well, I still am struggling with it in the passengers per car, and I see standards as, and Andrea, read your definition again. What did you say? A standard is. Right. So I guess I don't see them as violating policy, Rich, so much as that what we've created is a box we want you to operate in, and we want to know when we're not in the box. If you had 5 days with 135 people on a couple of trains, you'd be trying to figure out what to do to change it.
That, but I am very leery of the board setting a policy that I know at time, you know, on individual days we're going to exceed those policies, and I don't think we want to be in a position of trying to deal with 3 or 4 individual days and people say, okay, they violated policy. I think we have to deal with, if we're trying to improve quality, we're dealing with averages here. And that's why I'd like to focus on, we're dealing with averages on these car loadings. We're not dealing with, you know, on every train, we're running with less than 120 people per car. Because that skews where you measure things. If it's an absolute limit, then everything's got to be below it.
I think there's an important point here about clarity about the intent
yes.
of these. And I think it is possible to set these as an absolute limit. I don't think that's the intent of the board in struggling with this and trying to adopt it. But there are performance criteria against which we measure performance and then have a quarterly review, as Andrea said, of the specific performance with some reactions or feedback from the general manager. It sets, the way the bus standards do, it sets a framework for making decisions about individual bus lines and ridership and modification of service by frequency or even abandonment of a line on the bus system. It doesn't say that those standards are inviolable limits on the bus system. It says that those are the way we will agree to evaluate and measure specific performance. I think most of all, though, it is important for having clarity about this for the customers, because ultimately we do this so that we have some measurable, understandable performance criteria for both bus and rail that the customers can understand, both in terms of intent and in follow-up on the evaluation process. If we're having a kind of discussion about what it means, we need better clarity in language about this that satisfies the general manager's concern and still allows the board to have meaningful standards against which to have a discussion with the general manager about problems that may have occurred temporarily within the system about those. I don't think we've reached that yet in terms of crispness and clarity of intent about the use and application of the standards.
Yeah, I would also say, to me, there's a difference between key performance indicators, which we set annually,
mm-hmm.
we measure against, and certainly do better than some, worse than some, and we adjust to it. These are setting standards. It's not just key performance criteria. It's standards that we have to live up to. And I think we have to make it clear, and I'm thinking about the customers when I talk about this. If a customer gets on a car that's 130 passengers per car, you know, it's really crowded, but we violated standards. You know, we're violating our standards. To me, standards are our limits. And when and that's why I like the use of the word average here so that we can explain to the customer. It's not the one car you get onto or the one train you get onto. It's when you look at it over a period of time, what's the average loading on? That's what we set the standard on. And to me, there is a difference between standards and key performance indicators.
Well, they're performance standards against which we measure actual service. I don't think it's an intent that it says it can't ever be in excess of those standards or below those standards, for instance, in terms of car loadings below 80. So I think we have some intent.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, let me give you part of what made me pause on this is that if half the days I'm running at 140 and half the days I'm running at 100, on average, I'm at 120. Mm-hmm. And so you could report to me, on average, I'm at 120, I'm not violating standards, but 50% of the time, I have an extra 20 people in the car that the board sort of said is unacceptable. So, you know, I'm wondering, because I'm sensitive, Rich, to what you're saying, I'm wondering, you know, if there's a way, rather than saying on average, to say something like we establish as a general operating practice a minimum of 80, a maximum of 120, with optimal at 100 during rush, so that gives us the room for the day that something goes wrong or that we have a bad, I mean,
that works much better for
us. You know, and then we're not having people play with the math and saying, you know, you're really saying 140 is acceptable.
That I don't mind. That gives you a little bit more.
That would be acceptable. So as a general operating practice comes after establishes, and then we can get rid of the words average. Does that work?
Mr. Acosta.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, I had the fortune or misfortune to work on the Chicago service standards about 10 plus years ago. I just want to get back to the issue of intent, and I'm just looking at this from the standpoint of, you know, how we did it in Chicago, but I think it may be helpful in terms of how we relate this to the other indicators that we had talked about. I think the basic issue here is really scheduled service. How much scheduled service are we putting out during a certain period of time, and how are we making those determinations in terms of headways and frequency and the hours of service, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And to a great extent, I think we're kind of confusing kind of performance at the end versus this, because this is actually the beginning of that process where, you know, they have people going out looking at loads. Every day it's going to be a little different, but ultimately I don't know what your pick schedule is here, but every quarter, let's say, they come out with a new schedule, and to the extent these schedules are changed to reflect what the agency has seen in terms of passenger increases or decreases or certain problems that may recur frequently, they will make a schedule change later to reflect that. So I think Rich is correct. You can't, you know, account for every single day, but you have to look at kind of what's happening at the system, you know, on the system during that period of time, and then take corrective action, you know, when you introduce new schedules in terms of fixing it. And there are some, because that basically is how, you know, we use that, and that to the extent that, you know, from our customer standpoint, they understand that during the peak hours, you will have standing loads. But we're going to run as much service as possible, you know, within reason, to ensure that you will have always a certain level of crowding, that you're not going to see packed trains. And we'll get to the off-peak in a few minutes, but that's essentially what it is. It's kind of a compact with your customers saying, you know, on average, we are going to provide this level of service during the peak hours in order to ensure a certain level of quality in terms of your passenger comfort, the number of trains you'll see per, you know, per hour, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that doesn't take into account, you know, service disruptions and other things, but this is basically how they plan out their service for that cycle. And then I think it's incumbent on the management team then to say, we've identified all these problems during that quarter, and this is what we intend to do with our schedules to fix it. And I think that's really the issue. And then we have other indicators in terms of on-time performance or whatever. So if their schedules are off or if they need more time between points, they have to make those adjustments in order to address them because of problems that they're seeing. So I think we need to put this in some context because I think we're trying to load too much into this. As possible. This is an important document because I think, again, it is a message to our customers in terms of the quality of service and also from a budgetary standpoint, how much service can we afford to put out? And, you know, kind of, and it does drive our budget from that standpoint. So I kind of see it as in those terms as opposed to trying to make it, you know, the all-encompassing document that we'd like it to be. But I think it does have a very specific purpose in terms of what. What they're trying to accomplish.
Did you have Are you in agreement about the specific description that we use to characterize what these actually are, Ms. Hyman?
I've fixed my problem if Mr. Sarles is okay with it, and I understand what Andrea said, and I understand what Mr. Acosta said, and I get it, but I was also concerned, as you know.
I only want to make sure that we have an agreement about the specific language that will go into the recommendation to the board for adoption of this board resolution.
Right. So we took average out of the one.
We did.
And we've added as a general operating practice and removed the word average out of the other. Is that correct?
Yes,
I have one other issue.
The staff is.
They're nodding. I have one other issue, Mr. Downs, that I just want to raise, and it is this, you know, Arlington Cemetery begins to get called out in a particular way. And certainly many people would say, why do you have to go to Arlington Cemetery more than once every 12 minutes? But what this represents is an acknowledgement that the connectivity on the Virginia side of the river between the southern trains and the more northern trains is quite reduced compared to the rest of the system during rush. That's solved on the Red Line by the fact that we run trains back and forth. It's not interlined necessarily, but we've got trains that turn around and come back. We don't have the capacity, as I understand it, to do that right now. But I am very concerned, and I feel like I need to say this here. We're going to have to come back and adjust this anyway when Silver comes on. Because right now it doesn't identify West Falls Church as part of where the core service will be expected, the interline segment. But I feel very strongly that once the Silver Line goes out to Wheelie Avenue and then beyond, that we are going to see some new Virginia commuting patterns. And this segment being less well served is going to have an impact and is something that collectively we are going to have to deal with at some point. Whether it is with bus service or something else, I assent to this because it is what it is. It's been long in the planning. But for Virginia commuters who start out south and need to go northwest and don't need to go across the river, this is not optimum.
And I think that's why it's good to adopt standards, because if we start to exceed those standards or even this standard, we can come back, we will come back as part of a strategic planning effort with options that will allow you to change that in the other direction.
Right. I totally understand that, but I just felt like I couldn't vote to send this forward without making sure we all understood that there's some consequences here beyond that people can only get on and off at the cemetery every 12 minutes.
One of the things, though, that I assumed that would come with the approval of the operations plan for phase one of the Silver Line would be a discussion of that impact on this segment of the Blue Line. And remind me that comes to the board for approval when? December, January. Go ahead. Mr. Downing?
You finished with the numbers?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment that, as I read it, this was a significant improvement over the first effort and clearly reflected the time that was spent on it and the outcome. I thought the earlier one tended to confuse the peak and the off-peak and pick the least served part of the system and set that as the standard. This doesn't do that. I think it's much more effective. I think what's going to be more of a discussion will be when you come to us with the off-peak standards. That's really a policy call. This is a description of the physical capacity and how we best use it. But I think when we come back with that, it is a policy call. I think it will be benefited if we use the same descriptors of the system. what do we run in the core, what do we run out at the extremes, and distinguish between those. But I also think it will benefit us in that discussion if we can look at what the costs are of different levels of off-peak service. Because we'll make a choice, but we don't want to make a choice we can't afford.
The off-peak is the work zones and stuff like that, because it also impacts progress.
I think it's important to have some clarity about, a bit of clarity about phase two, that it would include off-peak. Will it include a criteria for measuring on-time performance? And when do you envision that process coming back to the board for some, at least a preliminary review of phase two? Okay. It's good for the public to understand that this is not it in its entirety. There's another phase of this. And in order to be able to say that, I think we need to give them some time expectations and some indication of subject matter on phase two. I also would reinforce the importance of having this be a quarterly performance review with the general manager about the standards as we develop them, because it gives us an opportunity to make adjustments in those standards as we go. There's no such thing as a perfect standard. There's no such thing as a standard that won't need adjustment as we face the realities of what utility it has both for us and for our customers. So that I think a commitment on the part of the board and the staff to quarterly reviews of these standards is really important. And I would add, we don't do the quarterly performance about how the bus system is running as against its own performance standards, and we probably ought to marry the two into a quarterly performance about both bus and rail performance standards. Any?
Do you need a motion to move these to the? So I would move that we recommend the resolution as amended to the full board at our next board meeting.
Here, a motion and a second to move the resolution as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The ayes have it. That concludes the agenda for the Customer Service Committee. Thank you.